Welcome everyone back to the Damage Report. Not just any day though, today is Friday. Important for two reasons. One that's true every day, and that is that it is our garbage day. So we will be throwing away our garbage people of the week, but who will be doing it after all? Brett is still exiled. He hasn't yet apologized. Until he does, he can't be allowed back into the kingdom. So we decided to go with something even better, and I hope that Brett's hearing me say that. For the first time as co-host on the Damage Report, we are joined by the host of Around the Nation, Jeff Waldorf. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Brett, under the bus, how does that feel?
Exactly. I think he's working on Indisputable right now, so I don't think he could tell that I did that. But we're very glad to have you here. Now
I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you. I know that you are a very humble person, so I'm going to make you very uncomfortable right now and ask you to talk about what you do on your show. What sorts of things do you like to cover? What do you feel like you bring to this thing that we do?
Well, I talk a lot about the right wing, obviously dunking on conservatives and ridiculous conspiracy theories. I cover Trump a lot. And you know, the right wing a lot, QAnon. I talk a lot about those, you know, a lot about those things. And I also, of course, push back when the Democrats do dumb things.
All of that seems very reasonable to me. By the way, I can see the background. So there's one of the play buttons. So Jeff obviously has a YouTube channel you can definitely go check out. I like that cartoon of you, by the way. It's pretty awesome.
And yeah, the letter hack.
Letter hack, nice. And I believe that's Mini Morpho's work, the other one, right?
Yes.
That's
yes, awesome. I am the acid dragon.
Nice, nice.
Also, you may notice the lights back here. Red alert.
Well, then we're ready for a damage report, it sounds like.
Exactly.
Well, thank you everyone for being here. We're glad to have you watching the show, regardless of where you may be watching. Thank you very much. If you wouldn't mind hitting the like button, sharing the stream, that would be great. So the people know that we're live. And as we go through the next 90 minutes, in which we're going to give a little bit of an update on the charges facing the Trump organization, then launching into a massive Olympics block of news, basically less about sports, more about injustice. So that's going to be fun. We've got nukes, and soon we'll have more expensive ones, fancy gilded nukes. And then we're going to get to talk about a TV show that's coming out soon. I will look for any excuse to bring pop culture into this show, and I believe I've found a good one coming up a bit later. And then finally, you're going to have to wait until the end, but we will be throwing away our garbage people of the week. And if you would like to be involved in that, you can head over to the community tab on our YouTube channel and go vote for the community garbage person of the week. That is still live. Along the way, if you want to send us any comments, tweets, super chats, anything like that, we'll respond as we go. But with that said, Jeff, you want to jump into this thing?
Heck yeah.
Let's do it. Okay. The Trump organization and Alan Weisselberg, the CFO, are facing a number of charges. Yesterday on the show, we didn't have the details, but now we do, as well as updates coming from the Trump family and others in the Trump inner circle. So the Trump organization was charged yesterday with running a 15-year scheme to help its executives evade taxes by compensating them with fringe benefits that were hidden from the authorities. Bear in mind, fringe very much from the perspective of a wealthy person. This is a lot of money. It's not fringe for us. When I get free ramen at work, that's fringe. For them, it's cars and, you know, college educations and stuff like that. So what are the 15 charges that they're facing? Well, there's one count of scheme to defraud in the first degree, one count of conspiracy in the fourth degree, one count of grand larceny in the second degree. There's all sorts of degrees. Some of them were unpaid for. Four counts of criminal tax fraud in the third degree, four counts of offering a false instrument for filing in the first degree. No word if it's a guitar or what, I'm not sure. Four counts of falsifying business records in the first degree. And that is, of course, on top of the charges we knew about yesterday, which includes Alan Weisselberg, who Trump once praised for doing, quote, whatever is necessary to protect the bottom line, of avoiding taxes on $1.7 million in perks. So he, as an individual, is facing quite a few charges. The organization also facing quite a few charges. So there's a lot coming down the road. I don't know how significant it's going to be, Jeff. And actually, I don't know what your thoughts are on this. How significant do you think this is? Is this a nothing burger or a different type of burger?
Well, it's definitely a different type of burger, I would say. As far as whether or not it will actually go after Donald Trump, again, there's a reason that they call him Teflon Don. A lot of this stuff generally doesn't stick to him. And so what I see is going to happen is Weisselberg, I think he's going to take the fall. If this happens to end up leading to some prison time or fines Donald Trump's going to complain about it. He's going to go, well, he can't go on Twitter, but he's going to blog about it like it's 2005 on his GeoCities site or whatever he's got. But ultimately, I don't think anything is going to end up sticking because we live in America. In America, we don't punish people who break these kinds of laws, white collar criminals. We just don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think? So obviously that's my general stance to this as well. I wonder though if the desire to at least try to get Trump might lead them to be forced to take seriously what Alan Weisselberg might have done. Like maybe we'll get him. Like if there wasn't Trump, if it was just Weisselberg, I question whether these charges would have been brought. I guess I overlap with Trump's lawyers in saying that. Not to say that they're made up, they're fake, they're trying to get him a liar, whatever. But would they actually look into it? Is this, have they managed to find the only company in New York City that's not paying taxes, whether on fringe benefits or otherwise? I sort of doubt that, but what do you think?
I just don't have any faith. I don't really have any faith in the system because we've seen, you remember the Panama Papers, right? You remember people getting away with, you know, billions of dollars of avoiding taxes and tax fraud. You think they're actually going to go after Donald Trump for something like this? Someone will obviously end up paying for this, and likely it will be Weisselberg, maybe a couple of other people within the Trump organization. But members of the family, I just don't have any faith that we're going to ever have any sort of justice in this case.
Yeah. Well, as I've been saying for a long time with the audience, please don't invest any of your spirit into the idea that you'll see one of them in an orange jumpsuit. It's probably not going to happen, no matter how warranted or merited it might be. In any event, I want to give you a little. Oh, sorry. Continue.
I was going to say it's like investing in something like Dogecoin. Don't do it. You're going to lose. It's going to be you're going to be very, very sad. Wow.
Oh God. Well, and you're going to be sad too, because now you're about to get a lot of DMs about that. Anyway, okay, so a little bit more details of what's going on. Prosecutors said in court that their investigation is ongoing. So we have these 15 charges, but that's not where this ends necessarily. They're reportedly trying to make an even broader case against the company or even the former president himself. Now, let's get into the response. So lawyers for the Trump organization called the case inappropriate and unjustified, saying it should be resolved by civil tax authorities. Their lawyer said, in our view, this case was brought because the company's name is Trump. This case signals that it is now open season for local prosecutors to target federal political opponents and adversaries. So look, obviously, philosophically, I'm not interested in that. What I would say, though, is I don't want it to be open season for them to make up things. But if it's open season to finally take seriously actual financial crimes that have been committed, good. Honestly, like it seems sort of overdue. And they say, Jeff, go, the civil tax authority should have taken care of this. Apparently they weren't, because apparently this has been going on for years and years and possibly decades at the Trump organization, and the civil tax authorities were nowhere to be seen. So it seems to be overdue. A lot of their response seems to be much less, this didn't happen, and much more, you only care about our crimes because we're Trump's. It's still a crime, though.
They might actually have a point there. Again, since they ignored those crimes going on for so long, and they tend to ignore people who are wealthy who do the same types of crimes, and these, you know, gigantic corporations who do tax fraud, money laundering, tax evasion, they don't go after them. But now they have a name and a face. And this isn't me, you know, trying to defend the fact that they're doing crimes. No, I want to see everybody who does these crimes be punished for it. It's just that we don't have this. We have this uneven application of justice. And in this case, if they actually did do what they're alleged to have done, and I don't have any reason to believe that they didn't do that, then obviously we should absolutely go after them. But at the same time, I love how they say, well, okay, political opponents, right? As if they're not also engaged in the same type of hypocrisy, especially during, you know, let's look back at conservatives going after people, their political opponents, trying to use the justice system against them. How many Benghazi hearings have we had, right?
Several.
What about the DOJ? Exactly. The DOJ being asked to spy on reporters during the Trump administration, going after news outlets that were anti-Trump. You had, you know, phone records being taken that even included a minor. And so for them to talk about that, total and complete hypocrisy. They do it too.
Exactly. Apparently it's open season. Apparently it's been open season, at least as far as they're concerned. Let's go into the reactions. So heads up to the director. I'm gonna call a little bit of an audible. Let's reverse the order of those videos there. I'm gonna do this slightly differently, but the Trump Organization and Alan Weisselberg are now facing a lot of different charges. And yesterday, in advance of the charges, we had heard that Trump was excited about it. He thought it was going to be a good thing because he could spin it as a witch hunt. Well, John Santucci, a news reporter for ABC, spoke with Trump. And apparently that wasn't the way it played out in real time.
Terry, actually, I just spoke to former President Trump, who's reacting to this in real time. He called the charges a disgrace, said it's a continuation of the witch hunt that's been going on for some time, repeatedly said it's a shame. And I also said to him, Terry, you know, we saw some of that footage of Alan Weisselberg and the legal team walking into court. I said, Mr. President, are you aware that they brought your CFO in handcuffs? The president was unaware of that. He actually paused for a moment while we were on the phone, Terry, looked up at cable news coverage, and said to me, John, I can't believe it. It's a disgrace, a disgrace. He's a tremendous person. And then he went on to say about Weisselberg, this is former President Trump, Terry. He says they are pressuring him, setting him up. They want him to lie against Trump. I then asked the former president, does he think that's going to happen? And Terry, his response was no.
Okay, as people are pointing out in the chat, yes. On Alan Weisselberg, the mask does make him look like some sort of massive bird. That is totally true. I thought John Oliver was in that video. But anyway, so Jeff, he had been saying, this is gonna be a great thing, man. We're gonna be able to spin it as a witch hunt. It's gonna get everybody fired up. But apparently as it was actually happening, when he saw the actual handcuffs, it maybe made it a little bit more real for him. And he suddenly took it a little bit more seriously.
Yeah, this is the pillow guy redux. That's what this is. You know, You had that guy out there talking about how, I can't wait till they bring me to court, till Dominion comes and takes me to court, because then we're going to be able to present our evidence. It's sort of along that thinking. The problem with Donald Trump is that he is surrounded by people who don't tell him the truth. And you know, even if they try to tell him the truth, he won't admit the truth. He doesn't understand. So, you know, he's not that intelligent. He's really not that smart. He's not the smartest, greatest person, doesn't have the greatest genes. And so he doesn't understand what's going on around him. And then when he sees the handcuffs, you're right. It's real now. Uh-oh, I might be in trouble, or at least I might lose some money, or I might lose the guy who knows where all the bodies are buried.
Let me ask you a more general question. So if this were a reasonable world, having the former CFO or the current CFO, the Trump org going down for a former president, that would hurt them. But that would probably be the same world where having your personal lawyer, your handler, your all these people go to jail would also be a bad thing. And clearly that didn't bother his base. So it is impossible to speculate, but I'm gonna ask you to do it anyway. Going into the midterms, and perhaps, you know, if it lasts long enough, into the presidential primary for the Republicans, will this actually be more likely to get his base worked up and support him? Or will it cause, is it the straw that broke the camel's back and it's one more reason they'll turn to DeSantis or Tucker Carlson in a couple of years?
I mean, it really depends on how into Trump the base still is and what he does in between now and then. I mean, I'm seeing indications that really the only people that are left are a small group of fringe Republicans that hang on everything he says. And understand that right now the Republican Party is pretty much fringe, in my opinion at least, where you still have like half of all Republicans that believe that Donald Trump is still president. At some point, I think they're gonna realize, you know what, this guy's kind of a loser. He's not really doing anything other than sitting there and complaining on his blog, of which got shut down, if you didn't remember that, because of low traffic. You even had videos of Donald Trump doing a rally where people were just walking away because they were bored. So it really depends on how much that spreads, how bored these people are of Trump's. And basically, he's sounding like a broken record at this point. Election, they stole the election from me. It's very, very unfair, radical left. And I think he's gonna lose a lot of his fan club. And it's not going to matter too much. Somebody else is going to replace him. Somebody like, I could see Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's already raised tons and tons of money for trolling AOC, for saying the most outrageous and despicable things. I think she is going to be the new and upcoming replacement for Donald Trump. Oh, but then again, of course, anyone can happen. The worst people tend to crop up. You know, something about like the worst chunks bubbling up to the surface. I think that's what you're going to see. So yeah, it's basically the Republican Party's a rotten stew.
Yeah, that's disgusting metaphor, but likely to be true. Yeah. Okay, well, really fast. Let's wrap this up with responses from the members of the actual family. So what do the Trumps think about these charges? Well, we're going to work our way up from bottom Trump to top Trump. So starting off with Eric, technically a Trump. Here is what Eric Trump had to say about it.
Crime is rampant. People are leaving the city in record numbers. It's dirty. It's disgusting. New York's no longer what it is. And they have an entire district attorney office and attorney general's office that's focused on $3.5 million to take down a political opponent. I mean, this is what they do. This is New York State for you. This is worse than a banana republic. It's truly horrible. It's truly horrible. And Raymond, you know this better than anybody. They're afraid that my father is going to run in 2024, and they're afraid that he's going to win. So they don't look at corrupt Hunter Biden. They don't look at the fact that he's taking money from China and the Ukraine and other countries, and he's selling his finger paintings for $500,000 to undisclosed people. No, they don't care about any of that. They care about going after innocent, great human beings. Alan Weisselberg is one of them, and taking out Donald Trump and going after a political opponent.
Eric. Okay, so that was mostly a lot of whataboutism and all that. Like, it's just, you can make everything about Hunter Biden, literally everything. If you didn't enjoy the last episode of Loki enough, probably Hunter Biden got involved as an EP at some point. But and what makes it sad is that, of course, what's that?
The laptop. The laptop. You got to check the laptop.
Exactly. What you have is an incredibly wealthy person going on a network with incredibly wealthy hosts to talk about why you shouldn't care about the crimes of incredibly wealthy individuals and corporations because of something, some other incredibly wealthy person. And a bunch of people who are actually struggling, whether I find most of their ideology abhorrent or not, they are actually struggling economically, are going to be swept along with this absolute nonsense. So it's sort of sad that whataboutism works as well as it does.
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely true. That's a great point. I just want to go back to what he said about it being a banana republic. I don't think he understands what a banana republic actually is.
No.
Here we have New York City actually trying to enforce law for once, right? Against a wealthy person. Yeah. And here you have him. I can't believe how corrupt that is. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Again, do you actually know what words mean? What things actually are. And that's something that I find all the time on the right, is that they can't define anything. They use buzzwords, Pavlovian response. It gets people fired up. Oh my God, witch hunt, banana republic. I can't believe they would go after such a fine and wonderful person. There was absolutely nothing of substance in that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like the exact opposite of a banana republic. I mean, look, if you're worried about banana republics as they are, Eric was. Don Jr. said, and I'm going to read this like a normal person, but imagine that I was coked out of my head. He said it's political persecution that would suit a banana republic with really squinty eyes. Now, if you were really worried about that, why is he going on Fox to talk about that ExxonMobil lobbyist video that came out? That's a major corporation using their overwhelming financial means to ensure that they get what they want legislatively, or perhaps more importantly, that nothing ever changes and they have a stranglehold on our democracy. That's scary. That's something bad. No, a company finally being investigated for its financial crimes is not what it takes to make a banana republic. It usually requires a bit more than that. But let me give you the last response. This from the main Trump, Donald Trump, and then we'll wrap this up. He said, "The political witch hunt by the radical left Democrats, with New York now taking over the assignment, continues. It is dividing our country like never before. Do people see the radical left prosecutors and what they are trying to do to 75 million plus voters and patriots for what it is?" It was 74 million and change. I will never stop being bothered by their inability to know how simple rounding works.
That's a weak response. And it kind of goes to what Jeff was saying about the broken record. Now, I may disagree about how likely they are to get bored of the broken record, but it very much is a broken record. That could be replying to like 50 different bits of news over the past 4 years. Honestly, I don't know.
That's true. That's true.
Any final thoughts?
Yes. So look, I love how he continues to bring up and connect this to the election. This has nothing to do with the election. It has nothing to do with the 75 million plus voters. It's like, what are they on an extra subscription model or something? like a Trump University type of subscription or something? I don't know. But the organization did literal crime. That's what they're trying to do. They're going after literal tax fraud. That is defrauding the people that he says he speaks for. And by the way, the people that he says he speaks for, they look at this guy and they think, oh no, he's a genius for avoiding taxes. I mean, I end up having to pay more in my taxes to cover what he doesn't pay, but that makes him a genius. Okay, but what does that make you?
A financial idiot.
Yes.
It makes you. Anyway, okay, so I've had enough of his family for now. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna take our first break. When we come back, we're gonna delve into the Olympics. And Jeff and I are going to give you our predictions for who's going to win each event. I'm kidding. We're not going to do that. But we are going to talk about some of the injustice that's going on in advance of the Olympics for this. Okay, Jeff, you ready to talk some sports?
No.
Me either. And well, certainly we'll do it anyway. that's not what people generally come here for. But there's a lot going on because the Olympics are coming. Let's talk about it. Oh boy, the Olympics are shaping up to be as unjust a situation as one can imagine. Let's go through a few different ways. The first is that Olympic hopeful has already qualified for at least one event. A world record holder, Sha'Carri Richardson, might no longer be able to compete in the Olympics. Why? It turns out that she killed a man? No, she tested positive for marijuana. Now, granted, I say that like as a surprise to you. Literally, everybody has seen this by now, but that's madness. She's currently facing a suspension of 1 month. Initially, it looked like it could have been 3 months. It's one. So, in theory, she might be able to qualify for another event. But right now, because the test in question was conducted at the US Olympic trials, she was going to run the 200 meters, by the way. She was omitted from the event's entry list. Her initial qualifying run is invalidated because of the test. She'd won the 100 meter final in 10.86 seconds. Well, theoretically, it doesn't count anymore because of the marijuana, but she could still potentially compete in the 4x100 melee race. So meter race. So in response to that, she put out initial statement, a tweet saying, "I am human." Yeah. And she gave an interview earlier. She was talking to NBC and she talked about the fact that her positive test for marijuana came because she smoked marijuana as a way to cope with the unexpected death of her biological mother while she was in Oregon for the Olympic trials. Richardson, who was raised by her grandmother, said she learned about the death from a reporter during an interview and called it triggering and definitely nerve shocking. So she had just found out about the death of her biological mother. She was in a state where, and I can't stress this enough, marijuana is legal. But because of that, her Olympic dreams, her career in that way might be over. Jeff, what do you think?
This isn't just madness. It's reefer madness. That's what this is.
That is true. It is.
No, look, this is an incredibly sad story to me. I generally don't care about sports, but this is the humanization right here. The athletes, the people, as you put up, you know, in that last graphic, dealing with their mother's death by using something that is perfectly legal in that state. That should not be a problem whatsoever. I mean, just imagine if she had gotten blackout drunk, it wouldn't have been a problem. Or if she had, you know, taken over the counter, or well, maybe not over the counter, but like prescription pharmaceuticals. Well, that would have been fine, right? Mm-hmm. And so I don't understand the issue with something that is perfectly legal in that state, her using it, which by the way, cannabis can stay in your system for quite some time. So it's not as if she even showed up to the, you know, to the event or to the qualifying event, you know, high. So it just, exactly. It doesn't make any sense. It's a ridiculous thing to disqualify her for, you know, being able to do that event based on this.
Exactly. Yeah, she didn't show up high, and if she let's say the other obvious thing. So if she did, it'd be even more impressive. Like, they are supposed to be weeding out performance enhancing drugs. I've gotten high. It did not increase my performance in any way. But anyway, no, it's just ridiculous. It makes you want to sleep. It makes you want to not move, perhaps eat a little bit. It's not giving you a competitive edge. Superman didn't run faster than a speeding bullet because he was toked out. That's not how any of this works. So it is legal. It is not performance enhancing. It is incredibly common to be used. Mm-hmm. And as Jeff pointed out, like, if she had gotten blackout drunk, she would have been fine. I'll go a step further. If she was a raging alcoholic, she would be fine. If the second she got off the field, she started chugging rum, she would be fine. She'd be fine in terms of this test. She'd be fine socially because that's not a serious thing. Marijuana is only a serious thing. And like, we've had some success nationally in getting more and more people to get that this is a personal thing that doesn't affect you. 18 states have now legalized it recreationally. But there's just so many obstacles. Things like this, like, think about some jobs, getting in the military, some careers, like, it's going to be a thing that weeds you out until we force literally every person, every organization to get it through their thick skulls that this has nothing to do with you, you stupid, stupid, old-fashioned, wedded to tradition morons.
Yeah, again, going back to, and by the way, you keep using the word weed. I picked that up. I got it. I see that pun.
Wait, what?
Brilliant.
I didn't even realize I was doing whatever.
Oh, really? You didn't realize that? Yeah, you kept saying weed them out. I thought that was.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, but talking about true. Going back to Reefer Madness again. Notice that Sha'Carri Richardson she's an African American. She's a person of color. This has been traditionally used against POC.
Yeah.
Over and over again. Again, Reefer Madness, right? Where supposedly, you know, ingesting cannabis or marijuana or whatever, smoking it, somehow makes you into a raging psycho murderer that will, you know, blood, like, that will stab your family. Yeah. And that's what the propaganda that they used to put out. And so, yeah, you have rules that are still based on that. Of course, they're going to consider it to be a performance enhancing drug. But for me, we all know the truth. We all know the reality that, of course, it's not. Unless you're, of course, dashing to the cupboard for more Doritos, or, you know, if you're doing curls of the cheese variety, this is not going to enhance your performance.
It might make you think you're moving faster, but you're very much not. Anyway, it's enhancing in other ways. Like, I watched that Between Two Ferns movie extremely high, and it was literally the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. And I'm sure that that helped, but not for running. My final point, she said in the interview, Sha'Carri said, I greatly apologize if I let you guys down, and I did. No, you did not. Society is letting us down. You very much didn't. Now that said, let's move to a little bit more Olympic injustice. In the Olympics, you can literally be weeded out of certain sports if you're a woman and you have too high a level of testosterone. And we are seeing that now. Namibians Christine Mboma and Beatrice Masilingi, both 18 years old, quote, have a natural high testosterone level after undergoing medical tests for athletes with differences of sexual development, according to the Namibian Olympic Committee. And for that reason, they have been banned from running in the 400 meter race. So this is not the first time this has happened. It's a rule that went into effect back in 2019 that caps athlete testosterone levels. Generally, you're going to be shocked to find out that the people who tend to get eliminated for these reasons are black. They're international athletes. Generally, it's been African runners competing in track and field events. They have found they're not asserting that this is some sort of supplement that they're taking or something like that. They just don't like that they have some sort of natural advantage. In this case, these women from Africa have an advantage that's not acceptable. Now, if Michael Phelps's arms are abnormally long and that helps him in swimming, that's just lucky genetics there. But if you naturally have higher testosterone, then that's a big issue and you literally need to be taken out. Jeff, thoughts?
Yeah, once again, it seems ridiculous. Having higher testosterone doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have an absolute advantage in sports. Again, once it comes down to skill, it comes down to training. Let me give you a kind of a weird analogy that you might be familiar with. So say I were to play, you know, basketball against Jay. Okay, so Jake and I are about the same size, you know, same height. Generally, I think we're probably around the same weight. Jake would destroy me at basketball. Why? Because I have no hand-eye coordination. I have no, you know, we're basically, you know, the same size and everything, but the skill levels are completely different. And so those innate characteristics don't really mean much in the face of, again, skills and training. So it does seem like a way to, as you keep pointing out, weed out certain people based on certain pretty arbitrary characteristics. And I understand that this could be, and I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt here, a way to try to foster as much, you know, competitive spirit, I guess. And you know, like to try to make things as equal and even as possible. Mm-hmm. But it just seems, where do you draw the line? It seems arbitrary.
Yeah, like to make it, but it's not about equality. Like sports is very much about figuring out who's the best at it. Like if every race was like, oh no, you can't win, you ran too fast. Well, then okay, let's just go jogging then. It's not a sport anymore.
Right.
And when they're weeding out certain natural advantages. So what if you were taller? You have longer legs. Well, that's not fair. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. It seems ridiculous. It seems ridiculous when they literally will allow you to either. So there's some events you can do that don't have this limitation, and that might end up having to happen to these runners. But you can also take testosterone suppressing measures. So you can manipulate your testosterone in one direction, but not in the other direction. How does any of this make sense? It's sports. You compete, like that's what it is. And they're not even making the case that it's some sort of fake, like false thing where they've boosted it via some medicine or something like that. So just absurd.
Let me just add in, by the way, this will affect trans athletes greatly so. And so, well, they can look at them. Well, yeah, obviously you've got a little bit higher testosterone or whatever. That means you have an unfair advantage and we can't have that. So we're just gonna preemptively, you know, ban in this certain way without actually giving a real ban to trans athletes, especially black trans athletes, so that they can't compete. So, you know, let's not forget about that part of this.
Yeah, just imagine banning tall people from basketball or people with long arms from tennis or whatever. All of these are advantages.
That would be great
for me. Not fair. Exactly.
That'd be great for me. I would actually be able to compete for once, but I would still probably get destroyed because I'm not good at basketball.
And by the way, there was a great comment from the Dungeon Dadster on Twitch who says, where's that outrage defending women's sports? Yeah, that is odd. I thought that they were so interested in the integrity of women's sports. They don't seem to care so much. Now that said, let's move into our last Olympic story. The Olympics has decided to ban a brand of swim caps that are specifically, there's a UK brand who does swim caps specifically for swimmers with natural black hair. That particular brand of swim cap will not be allowed. Now that the headline version of it sounds bad, the actual argumentation behind it might even be worse. So let's jump into this story. The hats are made by Solcap, which previously partnered with Alice Dearling, who last week qualified to become the first black female swimmer to represent Team GB at the Olympics, have been rejected by the International Swimming Federation. The body said that the caps did not fit, quote, the natural form of the head. And to their best knowledge, quote, the athletes competing at the international events never used, neither require caps of such size and configuration. Okay, so that might leave you to think, these things are madness. No one would ever need them. How could you dare imply that something so crazy, so unnatural could be needed? So I decided I'm gonna go to solcap.com and I'm gonna find a picture of what they look like. And here's what they look like. And you know what they look like? They look like swim caps. They perhaps have a little bit more room for someone with natural hair, but that's it. If you look at that and think, oh, well then what's the point of the competition? How could someone with that particular swim cap ever lose? You're insane. Or you might be someone who's a part of the International Swimming Federation board, because they actually outlawed that. It's like they have a full body internationally, because these are happening in different areas, all have to do with the Olympics.
that is just looking for ways to make it more difficult for women of color to compete in the Olympics in every way. If you transgress socially in terms of a substance that we don't like, no, you can have the ones we do like, but not if you have the ones that we don't like. If you have naturally high testosterone, if you need to put on some sort of swim cap or something like that, we're gonna make it as inconvenient as possible to possibly ban you from competing. But even if you get there, we want you to be as uncomfortable as possible, to know that this place is not fundamentally for people like you. And all of this is before the Olympics have even begun, Jeff.
Yeah, you know, it seems to be the theme of this is to try to exclude certain people from competing, whether or not and to go back to some of the old racial tropes that were being used that, and we've seen this a lot in reports about policing, for example. And I know it's some disparate things to try to tie together, but the common trope is that black people are stronger, or at least that's their perception. That's the fear that they have as well. Obviously, black people, you know, will do better. They will compete better, you know, going back to the shut up and dribble, right? That's all you're good for. And so we have to regulate you. We have to put a stop to you from out competing everyone else with your natural talents that we think, you know, that's the only thing that you're good for. And so this is insanity. And it is deeply, deeply racist. Even if they don't realize that, it is.
Yeah.
That's the result.
Yeah. Look, it seems sort of counterproductive in the same way that marijuana does not give you a competitive advantage. If that swim cap is bigger, well, look, I'm not an expert swimmer or anything. Isn't that going to slow you down? Isn't that actually going to make it more difficult? No, it's not an advantage. Why are you banning things that almost certainly make it harder? And finally, I want to give you a statement from someone backing the use of these swim caps. So understand, the original swimming cap, which was designed by Speedo 50, was created to prevent Caucasian hair from flowing to the face when swimming. So that was allowed, even though once you bind up Caucasian hair, that's not the natural size of the head or whatever, but that's fine. We'll allow that. Danielle Obey, the founding member of the Black Swimming Association, said the caps did not work for Afro hair, which, quote, grows up and defies gravity. She said, we need the space and the volume which products like the Soul Caps allow for. Inclusivity is realizing that no one head shape is normal. That is so reasonable, such common sense. But no, to the people in charge, that's not acceptable. Now that said, we are going, Jeff, final thoughts?
Yeah. I just wanted to ask why there's such a war against black people's natural hair. Mm-hmm. We see it in stories all over. People in school, you know, kids in school being punished for having their natural black hair. Women in the workplace being punished, being fired, or, you know, being told to rein it in their natural black hair. Why do we have, as a society, a war against natural black hair? And this is, I think, another extension of it. It's terrible.
Yeah. If you're in a state that has someone who's pushing to pass the Crown Act or some version of that, definitely look into that. And it's a great point that Jeff says. There's been some great documentaries and movies about it, including a recent episode of John Oliver's show that got into this topic. So definitely something to look into. We're gonna take our second break. When we come back, nukes, they're expensive and seemingly more important than things like college or dealing with climate change, because we're gonna prioritize it as a country. We'll give you the details after this. Okay, everybody, let's jump into perhaps the most bonkers news of the day. The US obviously has a massive nuclear arsenal, and that arsenal is big, not just in the number of weapons, but the cost. Initially, to develop nuclear weapons, to purchase and build those weapons, and to maintain them year by year. But that ain't nothing yet. They're looking into modernizing, expanding, and future proofing our nuclear arsenal for an incredible sum of money. So there's a great report right now available at The Intercept. Sarah Sirota is the reporter on that, saying that the Pentagon is hell-bent on securing funds to develop a brand new suite of nuclear weapons to replace its Cold War era arsenal, with the federal government projecting expenditures of $190 billion through 2030. To modernize powerful missiles, warheads, bombers, and submarines, initially conceived of back to, you know, engage in the arms race with the Soviet Union. So here are some details of what's going to be done and who is going to benefit. The Defense Department has already awarded Northrop Grumman the contract to build 600 new GBSDs. So those are ground-based strategic deterrents. They're intercontinental ballistic missiles intended to replace 450 1960s era Minuteman III missiles. So we need much more, actually, not just the same amount. We need more, which make up 1/3 of the military's nuclear triad. So very briefly, I say this for the audience, but especially if Donald Trump is watching. The nuclear triad, of course, is they're airdropped either cruise missiles or nuclear bombs, generally cruise missiles there, but launched via aircraft. They are ground-based cruise missiles and they are submarine-launched cruise missiles. Very important that a president understand the nuclear triad. In any event, Raytheon, another defense contractor, was also awarded a contract worth as much as $2 billion to develop a new nuclear cruise missile. And by the way, the GBSDs, those ground-based strategic deterrents that we talked about, costs are estimated at more than $80 billion through 2030, $260 billion over a 50-year life cycle, one of the most expensive weapons in US military history. And isn't it amazing, Jeff, when $260 billion can make it one of the most expensive weapons in US military history? It's not the clear winner. How awesome.
Yay. I just love the idea of putting more money into this instead of doing things like, I don't know, getting people healthcare and things like that, you know, or doing something about the impending disaster of climate change. But hey, let's just get enough weapons to blow up the world 40 times. Mm-hmm. Now 42 times.
Exactly. Yeah. We want to make sure that we give a nice shine to the glass that will be all that's left of human civilization. Now, there are some who are speaking out against this. We're going to see how successful they are. But resistance to the current plans have been coming from people in the House of Representatives, including legislators like Garamendi. So Garamendi is John Garamendi, representative, who has one of three different bills that's currently pending of a variety of forms that are intended to fight back against this. You have representatives Adam Smith, Mark Pocan, Ro Khanna, Pramila Jayapal. Ro Khanna, of course, is a great representative. He's been on the show many times to talk about, for instance, our support for the war on Yemen, among other things. Now, Pramila Jayapal, who's the chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, introduced an amendment last June to the House's fiscal year 2021 appropriations bill that sought to defund LRSOs. Those are long-range standoff weapons, a type of nuclear-armed cruise missile. The proposal died in a vote. And I want to give you the numbers because it mattered. It was 138-289. So overwhelmingly, no, we're not limiting even the spending on one of the forms of nuclear weapons, despite that effort there. And the efforts are ongoing. It's complex. It is not looking like there is time or the political will to get this done. Jeff, why can't we limit a little bit of the growth in spending? I'm not even talking about like a 50% cut or anything like that. Why is it so difficult to get anyone to sign on to that?
Maybe it has to do with fear. You know, the whole idea of, oh, we have to be strong. Again, we have to be strong. We have to have more missiles. We got to get more missiles. Besides, we also have to, you know, give more money to defense contractors because guess what? They pay our, you know, they give us bribes. They give us campaign donations. And of course, we have to continue to serve. We have to continue to buy up these weapons that we don't need. Once again, it's not necessarily, I don't believe that it's a deterrent for other countries. And I know maybe that's a controversial thing to say, but I don't believe it's, you know, being able to destroy the world several times over is mm-hmm. going to be a great deterrent for anyone. I don't think we should have these weapons at all. But apparently, unfortunately, most of Congress doesn't see it that way. And I don't know if it just has to do with the money or has to do with the fear or what is Fox News going to say. But I do know that we're going in the absolute wrong direction in stockpiling even more of these weapons.
Yeah. Yeah, I certainly agree. You know, in terms of the vote, Republicans are going to be more resistant, but it is very much a bipartisan thing. I think that both sides in the news is generally a sign of intellectual laziness, but there are some topics where it is basically true. Now, most of the people that are fighting against it are Democrats, but they are overwhelmed by the Democrats that whether they genuinely care about the nuclear arsenal or care generally like genuinely worried about it, they almost certainly have bought into the idea that we need this as a deterrent, in particular to China. A lot of this has China fear-mongering in the background pretty clearly. In fact, I want to jump ahead of the last graphic. So Representative Adam Smith, who's one of those who's involved in this effort, he said to be successful in this broader approach, we have to keep the China fear-mongering under control because it is, as you know, spreading. We have to be realistic about what we face there and not make them 10 feet tall. And the thing is, as twisted as it would be, if our representatives were genuinely that terrified of China and thought that we need better nuclear weapons, we can't nuke them with old busted nukes. I don't even think that that's really what it is. It's partly paying off the defense contractors with these massive contracts, and the fact that our head of the Department of Defense right now formerly worked for, I believe it was Lockheed Martin, that's awesome. But then it's also they're terrified that if they vote against it, other people, even more craven politicians, will attack them as not being sufficiently worried about national defense, and they'll be primaried and they'll be knocked out. That's the disgusting thing I feel like is lurking in the background, Jeff.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't disagree with any of that. Of course, it has to do with the money. Of course, it has to do with the public perception. The thing that I'm worried about is like you and I, like we're video gamers. I'm a video gamer, right? I really don't want to end up in the Fallout future as a result of some of these craven politicians, as you point out, wanting to serve and please their donors. And yeah, unfortunately, this is what it seems to be all about. These politicians that will continue to force, to basically live up to their contracts when it comes to these gigantic, this military industrial complex that we have in this country. And it's even more sad seeing, again, all this money going to all of that mutually assured destruction when we could actually be doing good things in this world. And exactly, we should be.
I agree. Okay, very briefly, we're gonna jump into our last story. Let's jump into it, Sophie. No, we're gonna do it. Don't even worry about it. The US is apparently pushing, this seems like good news, we'll undercut it soon, but it seems like good news, is pushing for a sort of global minimum corporate tax. And Biden is apparently behind this. Over 130 countries have now agreed to it. This minimum global tax proposal of 15%. So don't get too excited about that. But what is this about? What is the point of setting up some sort of minimum tax like this? Well, it's was proposed by the US, but is now widespread support. I mean, that's a majority of all the countries in the world, would force technology giants like Amazon and Facebook and other big global businesses to pay taxes in countries where their goods or services are sold, even if they have no physical presence there. It also includes plans to prevent the shifting of profits into tax havens by tech giants and other multinationals by enabling signatory countries to tax the world's largest countries based on revenues generated within their borders. So there's a lot of ways that they've sort of tried to get around paying their tax burden by pretending that they're not in a country that they sell things in because they're multinational corporations. They set up their headquarters in the country with the lowest taxes to get away from it, even though they're functionally operating in other countries that theoretically have higher taxes that won't apply to them. So what's interesting about this, Jeff, I think, is that several of the countries that have signed on to this are ones with low or zero corporate tax that have been used as tax havens by these major multinational corporations, including the Cayman Islands and Gibraltar. They're signatories to the deal. So that is pretty impressive. I'm sure there's gonna be a lot that we find out about loopholes and things like that. But this does seem like this could fix some of the worst excesses of this sort of bizarre loophole searching for corporate behavior.
Yeah, I'm sure some of those countries, those signatory countries that you mentioned, would welcome some of that additional revenue from some of these corporations that have essentially taken advantage of them for all this time. So yeah, I think it's a great idea. I would actually do, higher, but again, that's just wishful thinking for me. Getting them to agree to at least a floor of 15%, it seems like a fairly big deal. And I don't see a lot of people other than this show talking about it.
Yeah, well, I only found out about it earlier today. So hopefully it'll get picked up if it actually goes into effect. It is a low amount, obviously 15%. Although bear in mind, I would be perfectly happy with some corporations in the US paying 15% because right now they pay zero. So we'll see about their ability to evade even this low tax. But something like this, a global minimum corporate tax rate, global minimum standards in terms of worker pay and benefits and things like that, that is how you get to an actual equal playing field. that benefits the international working class, and we are very far away from that. That said, thank you to the linear audience. We got more for you online after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.